apologize for the delay. Just trying to get everybody hooked up again for our hybrid committee hearing. Welcome. Today is February 15th, about 1:13. Welcome to the Housing Finance and Policy Committee. Members, we are first going to have a discussion with a couple of the board members with the agency. And then after that, we'll go through some questions with the commissioner and kind of continue on from the last hearing. And then on Thursday, we'll have more of the board members in to get their perspective on things. So I appreciate everybody's patience. And with that, we will start, I guess, the kind of the interview process with Terry Tao. I hope I am pronouncing your name correctly. So if you could,
Chairman, please. Chairman, yes. If I may. I'm Jennifer Holm, the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. I think I had been asked to introduce the general concept of the board before this began. Is that correct, sir?
Perfect. I appreciate that, Commissioner.
Great. Well, Chairman Draheim and members of the committee, I think I failed to introduce myself last time because I'm with you so often, but I am Jennifer Holm, and I am the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. Minnesota Housing is unique among state agencies in Minnesota because it's a governmental entity that's independent from the rest of the state enterprise, and it's governed by a board of directors. I suppose the Met Council is the other entity that also has a separate board. So as commissioner, I have administrative authority and management and control of the agency is vested with the agency's board. The board has 7 members by statute. 6 public members are appointed by the governor, and then the state auditor fills that, we should say maybe first position, and so 1 + 6 for us. Because Minnesota Housing's finances are fairly complex, I am very pleased that many of my current board members were already with the board when I began. But it's just really important because of our financial management and bondholder obligations that housing finance agencies across the country have this kind of separate entities under the authority of boards. I just will say before I'll stay up here as it will with 2 of my fantastic board members, but I will say as commissioner, I feel very lucky that I have a very strong board of directors and this volunteer service, and it's a monthly meeting plus committees and sometimes hundreds of pages of background reading leading up to a board meeting. So I just have gratitude for such a strong board. And with that, sir, I will turn it over to you and have my board members introduce themselves.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Tao, are you ready to go?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you to Commissioner Ho, and thank you also to you, Chair Draheim, and to the members of the Senate Finance and Housing Committee. My name is Terry Tao, and I'm really excited to be here with you all today to introduce myself. I've actually been serving on the Board of Minnesota Housing since 2017. I've spent most of my professional career in the fields of community economic development, leadership development, and philanthropy. I have served on the St. Paul Planning Commission for several years and several nonprofit boards. So I've had a lot of experience in the governance space, particularly as it pertains to finance and audit, as well as programmatic purposes. My current position now is serving as the Program Director for Local Initiatives and Opportunities at the Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, which is another foundation here in the state of Minnesota. I know on a personal and professional scale how critical safe and affordable housing is to many Minnesota families, especially those living in vulnerable circumstances. Growing up, my refugee family didn't have a lot of money, but we owned our own home in Frogtown. And the home really having a home really meant it was a stable place for me and my 5 other siblings to come home to every day. And so my husband and I continued that tradition when we bought our house, and it's where we're raising our kids right now in St. Paul. My experience so far, as I asked to talk about my experience on the board, it's been excellent and really eye-opening as how we as government respond to particularly public and private entities, right, and partnerships because of the bonding authority we're negotiating with investors on Wall Street. I'm really honored to be bringing the work that I've learned working in community and philanthropy to this board. I've been doing housing work related issues for a while, starting with the Emerging Markets Homeownership Initiative, which was under Governor Paul Lente, and then also participating on Governor Dayton's Task Force on Housing in 2019, where we really looked at housing on a huge, massive statewide scale with a number of different partners. We know now there's much for the state to do, and the time is now. We are already seeing what a tight housing market means for families. It really is going to require us to make investments at many different levels to produce and preserve housing. It's going to mean workforce programs for people in the trades. It's going to mean us working on regulatory issues, as well as helping state and local officials allow different types of housing and density in neighborhoods, and really supports for families who are struggling right now. So I really see this as being a core foundation of the work. I'm honored to be serving on the board. And housing, I think, to me, is really going to help us remain stable and competitive as a state and regional market. Thank you. Welcome any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for that recap and good to see you again. Members, do we have any questions? Looks like you're getting off easy. Thank you for coming and visiting with us.
Yep.
Next up, we have Stephanie Klinzing. I hope I said that right. I have a feeling I didn't. Please pronounce your name correctly.
Yeah, I always tell people it's like Ajax Klinzing. When I served in the Minnesota House, they always said it was great to have Klinzing in the house. So.
I like
anyway,
it.
Anyway, yes, I'm very glad to be here. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members for inviting us here to introduce ourselves. I did appear one other time. I've been on the housing board for about 10 years, and I appeared one other time before the Senate. I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago. At that time, I thought it would be an annual thing, and I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't, because this gives the board members the opportunity to be kind of in a focus, a spotlight, to be able to tell you who we are and what we really believe about Minnesota housing and what the board, how the board operates.
I'm gonna interrupt. I'm sorry. Senator Rest has her hand up, and I don't know if I'm just slow to see it or not, but I'm gonna go to Senator Rest. And then we'll let you continue. I apologize. Okay. Senator Rest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, whoops, what is that doing? Is that better?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I actually was just going to say something after Ms. Klinzing presented herself, but I'll do it now. And that is greetings from an old colleague of yours from the House. Stephanie Klinzing and I served in the Minnesota House while she was there. And I didn't know what your future held for you, but I'm really pleased to hear from you today, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Senator Rest. I saw that you were on the committee, and I was very happy. I would have a welcoming, friendly face to be able to speak to, although everybody is, obviously. I did serve in the Minnesota House for one term, but I started as a county commissioner. I was elected, first woman ever elected to the Sherburne County Board of Commissioners, and served a term there. And then into the House. And then I served as mayor of my city for 12 years. And so I've had 18 years in government. and still, you know, believe that I still am in government. I think I conduct myself pretty much the same as I've always done as an elected public official, being an appointed person to the board. But like I said, I'm really happy to be here because the board members don't get a lot of spotlight, which is fine. Obviously, you know, we get to come together at the time that we have our board meetings, regular board meetings once a month, and then our special board meetings, and make the decisions. And those carry forward into action. But it's good that we get to have a little more opportunity to express how we feel about the finance agency and serving on the board. I'm going to start just basically from a place of a high level purpose of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I know that you all are aware very much of the agency. So I don't believe I'm telling you anything you don't know, but just from my own perspective, I believe that our high level purpose is that we to assure that there's affordable, safe, and decent housing that's possible for all Minnesotans. At the ground level, in 2021, the Minnesota Housing Agency assisted more than 93,000 Minnesota households and provided almost $2 billion in resources for housing. And when we see those figures, as far as the board is concerned, those don't get lost on us. We understand the responsibility that we have to serve well with what we've been entrusted with. And I really appreciate the fact that our programs and services are, for the most part, not a handout, but they're a lift up, not only for the people that we serve directly, but also for the generations that will follow them. Most of our programs, either to developers or individuals, come in the form of loans with terms for repayment. We do make grants, but those are carefully designed to target the most needy and hard to serve. The board is constantly managing a balancing act with market rate lending and practices and with serving those who are on the fringe of eligibility for commercial lending. Most of the funding we have available for our housing programs come from federal and state sources. And in that, the board's job is to ensure that whatever rules, guidelines, and laws that they set are followed, and that we meet those standards of accountability, not primarily, but so that we do stay off the front page of the New York Times. Although the housing agency does many things related to housing, what I see is the two most important roles are providing housing for the most vulnerable to homelessness, but also to remain fiscally sound in order to attract private investment through our bond sales, and then leverage that with government investment to get the most bang for the buck. Another important role for the Housing Agency Board of Directors is to ensure that all our programs and services are delivered equitably across the state. Now, obviously, the wide gap in home ownership between whites and the BIPOC communities in Minnesota is widely known. We're near the top of the list when it comes to that gap. I believe we are still fifth in the nation. This is something that the Housing Board takes very seriously, and we're determined to improve it. But there's also a gap in affordability housing opportunities between urban and rural areas of the state. And this is also at the forefront of the decisions made at the board level, in terms of meeting people's housing needs where they live, but also in terms of providing opportunities for developers, builders, and lenders throughout Minnesota. So it comes with an economic responsibility also. So I have been very involved with housing for almost all of my political life, and continue to have housing is actually one of my major focuses in what I'm doing in my later after elected years. And I really appreciate serving on the board. My colleagues are absolutely excellent. The board operates in a great high level way. And I think that we are doing the very best that we can for the people of Minnesota in their housing needs. So I could go on and on, but I thank you for the opportunity to appear before the committee, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you. Yeah, and the housing's the easy topic to go on and on about, isn't it?
It is.
So we have just a couple of generic questions for both of you. If that's okay, we would... Senator Duckworth, do you want to start off? And I guess what we'll do is just rotate back and forth So one of you can start and then the other one will answer and then take the first question on the next one, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And good afternoon. Thank you all for joining us and being here and sharing with us a little bit about yourself. Question for you would be, what do you believe MHFA does well to promote home ownership? Where are we succeeding and where can we do better in that regard? Thank you.
So I don't know which one of you want to go first, but why don't you start and then we'll go to the other one.
Sure. I think we are, you know, we certainly, in terms of homeownership, I think the fact that we're able to offer products on the market that, you know, granted, we're only 5% of the market, but the fact that we're able to offer, for example, down payment assistance is tremendously helpful, especially to a lot of our families, young families, families who are, you know, making a little over the current median income in the Twin Cities. And so things like that, I think, are tremendously helpful. Of course, we'd like it if the rest of the market would continue to do that, too. I think we have some very intentional, great partnerships. We help invest in the Home Stretch program, which is a curriculum that helps homeowners learn about, you know, the responsibilities of home ownership, right? And so, you know, what to look for in a good realtor, how to help fix your home, right? To essentially help them be successful homeowners. And so we have done that extremely well. Of course, again, we're a smaller part of the market. We have brought in a number of private partners to try to share these strategies because this is growing, right? We know, so to me, these are the things that Minnesota Housing does extremely well in regards to home ownership.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can follow up with that too. I think besides the financing that Minnesota Housing has provided, obviously great amounts of financing, the things that we do that go beyond that, and Terry mentioned a couple of them. One is the housing counseling, which has been really successful. We're constantly looking at putting more money and finding ways to make that program work better because, you know, we putting somebody in a house doesn't mean that they're going to be successful in home ownership. And we know that now. And so what we do is we bring people through a series of counseling that can keep them in a good place so that they can continue to be in their homes and not homeless. I also think that, you know, Terry had mentioned the partnerships that we have, and those are so important to what we do. Obviously, across the state, we need to have local partners that are going to do a good job of getting out the word about our programs, but also to bring people in and getting them qualified for the different programs that we have. I just think we do a good job. I think that the Minnesota Housing is known very well throughout the state. Wherever I have gone and talked to people in different places about Minnesota Housing, they're pretty fully aware of how you can access it and what we do. So I just think it's through partnerships and also through getting out the word about the programs and services that we do provide.
Thank you. Senator Deems.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I'd like to thank both of you for your services to public services, and we certainly do appreciate that. I do have a question that I'd like both of you to answer, and that would be in regards, as your member of a board of directors, do you meet with stakeholders regarding the MHFA's programming? And then also, if you do, could you give me an idea who some of the most recent stakeholders were that you met with? And yeah, whoever would like to go first.
Yeah, I can start with that, Terry, if you don't mind. Okay. Yeah, I'm Indigenous. My tribe is not here in Minnesota, but it is in Wisconsin, right over the border. So I have connection with the tribes here in Minnesota. So most of what I have been cooperating or engaging with in the last couple of years, mostly because of the need that's out there. The pandemic, of course, has made it worse, but it was the housing needs on the reservations for the tribes is horrendous. So anyway, I've engaged with them, and it's been amazing to me in the last couple of years how sophisticated the tribes are getting and how they are understanding the programs, understanding how they can benefit their people. And they are beginning to really get engaged with Minnesota Housing and we have a staff member that is our liaison between the tribes, and that position works very well. So I would say that's mostly the ones that I have been involved with, our constituents. I have had some opportunities to attend the housing conferences that have gone on. We have regional ones that we do in partnership with other housing entities within the state. And so just being involved with those conferences gives you a lot of understanding and background for what is happening on the ground. And I really haven't been surprised at what some of the people have said on the conferences, especially if they get to a place where they're really describing some serious situations. I think the board is fully aware of what is happening out there, and we're doing everything we possibly can to meet the demands of housing in this state.
And likewise, I've been able to attend regional events that the housing Minnesota Housing has hosted, and I'm always happy to go as a board member. You know, I'm here in the Twin Cities metro area, but I will say that because of the many relationships I've developed over the years and many different communities, a lot of different, you know, communities of color, a lot of different organizing groups, people have just emailed me, frankly. And so I'm always more than happy. And Commissioner Ho knows this, that I will definitely call her and say, this is what I'm hearing from community members. So I appreciate the formal opportunities, and also when general public just wants to reach out as well. And so I do have been hearing from a lot of people over the years on again, multitude of different issues as it relates to housing.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Senator, or Mr. Chair. And thank you to both of you for serving on the MHFA board. It's wonderful to have this much focus and members like you on the board. My question to you both is, how would you, we've been talking a lot about the Rent Help program of Minnesota, and I was wondering how you would rate that performance, and if there's anything different that you could perhaps think of that we could have done differently. And I'm sure our conversations will continue. We've had a couple hearings on this, so thank you.
Yeah, Terry, I can go first. When the funding came down and we knew that that would be a program that we would be putting together to help Minnesotans who are struggling with their rent through the pandemic, and we knew that the needs were great, and putting the program together, huge undertaking, and we were informed quite a bit all along as it was being put together, and knew that there were some delays, because really, I mean, to put together a program that big, and also seeing the maybe the not so successful programs in the past that have been put together in this way through the internet and with telephone calling and that sort of thing, we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to be running into huge glitches with this, which the public is really, really frustrated with, especially when you're talking about people who are on the verge of homelessness because they aren't going to be able to get their rent paid. So the time was taken to put the program together in the best way that we possibly could see that it would, so that we could serve the huge number of people that we knew were going to be coming into the system. And so I think it took a little longer to roll it out, but when it finally did come out, it was successful. There were not a huge amount of glitches that happened. I think we probably were all a bit overwhelmed. I think even though we had a pretty good idea that there was going to be a great deal of need that was going to be coming forward, we were overwhelmed by the numbers that showed up. And I think by December, I can't remember what the numbers were, 93,000 people or something. Had already called in to make application. So the decision that was made to end the program, or to at least end application, was made to keep those numbers from going even larger, knowing full well that the money was not going to last throughout, you know, for everybody who was signing up. With the hope, I'm kind of hopeful that we have this program in place. And it was a huge undertaking to do it, and we've got it. and now, and it would be really good if there was stepping forward from the legislature that would, you know, actually fund the program again so that we could continue a bit longer than we have been able to. But I know that's up to you, and I certainly understand that you've got a lot of other things to think about too, but helping people that are going to be suffering homelessness possibly because they aren't going to be able to pay their rent. And also not only the people that are in the residences, but also the landowners that are going to have to pay their bills, and the lenders who are, you know, sitting there too, eventually holding the bag if we don't get this whole problem going forward and getting it solved. So I think we did the best we could, and I'm hopeful that, you know, the program has not ended. Applications are not being taken any longer. However, there is an entity to fund. So I'll just leave you with that.
Yeah, and of course, I think hindsight is always 20/20. Of course, we now, knowing what we know, we would do things much differently. But I do agree for government to be as statewide government to be as responsive to this issue when it came down, I think it spoke to the strength of the partnerships we had, that we were able to bring people to the table quickly. We were able to secure funding sources to help in cases that weren't necessarily always covered by the administrative costs. And so to come to philanthropy or some other areas to support that work too. And again, really great example of partnership. You know, I think people, you know, when I heard frustrations from people who felt like it was taking a while, again, I conveyed, the folks contacted me, I conveyed that to the commissioner and the subsequent staff too. And so, but I do think when I think of the volume of impact, we knew there were families who were very cost burdened with housing before. The pandemic laid many things bare, and then we're continuing to do this work. So I'm really hoping we can really take the lessons learned from this about how we adapt and create programs in real time. There actually had been, counties had always had rental assistance programs. Philanthropy had supported rental assistance programs before. So this was, again, on the scale, the scale that it was built out was just, had to be massive. But I think the partnerships really helped us set us up a little more for success. But always lessons to be learned anytime we embark upon these kind of real-time innovative practices.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add, it's 44,000 that we had applicants by January 1st. And also there, you know, the Rent Help Minnesota is not the only rental assistance program in the state. And so we're definitely telling people that they need to seek out those applications through their cities or their counties also. So it's still there. We are concerned, obviously, the moratorium is ending on June 1st for evictions, and we're concerned about the cliff. I don't think anybody wants to see it being a very sharp cliff, and what will happen if we end up with people being evicted and all of the chaos it's going to cause, not only for them and their lives, but also for instance, the courts and the landlords and everybody else. So it would be good if we could find a way to augment that rental help assistance.
Thank you. Thank you both. I just had a couple more quick questions, if I could. And it was touched on a little bit earlier, but from your perspective, and you both have worked in this arena for years, and thank you for your service. And I know it's very complicated and ever changing, but why do you think Minnesota ranks so low as for the equity gap is my first question. I mean, what do you think we're doing wrong, and what do you think we need to change for that home ownership gap to improve so we're not in the bottom of the list?
Terry, did you want
to? Well, I think historically a lot of families, we know a lot of families of color, particularly African-American families, didn't have a whole lot of wealth. And so that put people behind the curve. Obviously, longstanding practices like redlining prohibited people from buying in certain neighborhoods too. So we have to look at the historical context. But I think right now, one of the things I learned actually from the governor's task force is that there is a number of families of color who want to buy homes, but the income level they're qualified at is not the same as the availability on the market. Like many of them could buy homes under 200,000, but that's 2% of the inventory of the market. And so it was like thousands of households, right? These are people who want to buy homes, income qualified, but again, but income only qualified only up to a certain amount. So so that when I made the call to action, because we, you know, these are folks who want, you know, to raise their families and buy homes and contribute to neighborhoods. And so the legacy we're doing wrong has been historical, but I will say we are, you know, that's why we were doing things like down payment assistance, right? We were doing things that we knew would help make it so that the housing could be more affordable to many families.
Yeah, and I'll mention, obviously, there's a lot of reasons why Minnesota has come into this place of being so high in that homeownership gap. But so there's a lot of reasons, and I think the board has availed itself very well of learning those things, and obviously with Terry being on the task force that looked, you know, into this into a deep sense, and she's brought back information to us. But many of us also have done our own research and know full well some of the things, and the redlining and the historic lending issue is there. I believe that it's, you know, we know it, and it's something that we're taking, not only us, but all of the, throughout the entire industry, housing industry, are looking at it and taking steps to make sure that that is taken care of. If it's an institutional issue, then we need to really take a deep dive into changing some of the practices that are there that keep that keep that going on. I really believe, and I've seen the result of the counseling that we have. A lot of people that are in that position of just being on the cusp of being able to be homeowners have a credit rating issue. And sometimes it doesn't take much to get that raised. I was involved with a couple that had, she had pretty good credit rating, but he didn't. And so they were not able to qualify for commercial lending, or even our programs actually. And so they went into the counseling, and it didn't take very long. I think they were in it for probably two or three months, because they just worked on getting his credit rating raised. Few simple little things, which they didn't know how to do it. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. And that raised his credit enough so that they ended up buying a home. So I think we're going in the right direction. I think we're hitting on the right things. But the intention that we have, I don't know that we've had that going on for very long. And so as long as we stay intentional and we understand now what are the parts of our system that are problematic, and then we can take the steps to correct those. I think we're going to go in a better direction. Hopefully we are not going to stake fifth. Maybe we're not now, but that was the last figure that I heard. Hopefully we won't stay fifth in the nation. Hopefully we will definitely bring that down.
So you both mentioned redlining a little bit, yeah, in your response. And, you know, I look at the current zoning that a lot of our communities have and the Met Council. Do you guys think there's any correlation? Is part of the problem the zoning of today is the red line of old? What, I mean, I know that's probably a far-fetched comparison, but it's kind of the same type of problem in a way. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you are definitely right on. That is very true. Having served as mayor of my city for 12 years, having been involved in setting zoning ordinances throughout that time, Elk River was a growing city. When I first became mayor, we were probably about 15,000 by the time I ended that. 12 years later, we were closer to 25,000. Definitely, that is true. The zoning is used intentionally sometimes to guide your community. And what I always heard was, we want to keep the average cost of our housing up. And they, you know, even thoughts at that time back 10 years ago that we should have, you know, the lowest level of housing we should have is $250,000. That really did cause me great dismay. And so I worked hard to make sure that our zoning ordinances weren't going to be prohibitive and keep people, the affordability out of the city. But we've seen some turnaround in that. We have a couple of cities now that I have ordinances on the book that are definitely speaking to that. I think Edina is one that now has come about, and they're looking at things like putting some more multi family zoning within some of the single zoning, which is problematic, obviously, because that's not the way that you necessarily want to go. That only causes more problems. But you can do that if you do it carefully and reasonably. And so I think it's happening, but I do know that there has to be more cooperation from the cities in that area. It would be a good idea to have a greater understanding of really where the cities are on this issue. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, we've had a lot of meetings with them, and it is a balancing act. Just thought I'd get your perspective. I do see Senator Port has her hand up. Do you have a question, Senator Port?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Dreheim. Wondering if there are things that Minnesota Housing is doing to encourage the private sector to help close that homeownership gap?
And I believe we are part of the Homeownership Alliance, which is bringing a number of partners together. And so, which was typically staffed by our Assistant Commissioner for Single Family, and that we continue to do that work, right? And so, to bring them in to make sure that the private, you know, like Wells Fargo and US Bank, for example, who are also huge mortgage, you know, lenders, are understanding their role too. And so, that's something as a board member I push, because the ability for us to influence is going to be really powerful, not just in home ownership, but also in rental markets, for them to encourage where they can put their, as part of CRA requirements, additional lending into developers who are building more density, you know, high density units with more affordability, right? Because the rental market's still really important. I think, you know, that's also why Rent Hub was so successful in a lot of ways, because we have so many renters. There are people who don't always want to buy homes either, and so we really, and as well as people who want to own property and use it as a means to pass on wealth to their families too as well. And so I speak that as a soon to be property owner here, additional property owner. And so so we try to influence and share the market on a number of different levels.
Thank you both. Mm-hmm. Any follow-up, Senator Port?
No, not right now. Thanks.
Thank you. And I once again, thank you both for testifying, members. We are going to continue on follow-up from the last meeting with the questions that were compiled either during the hearing or after the hearing. And we'll continue doing that. So members, if you have questions, send them over. The sooner you send them over, the sooner I can get them to the commissioner so they have time to dig into our questions and concerns. So with that, Commissioner Ho, are you available?
Yes, sir. I was sitting in the front row for my board members, and just want to express gratitude to them for making themselves available on short notice today.
Ditto. So Commissioner, do you want to go right through the list? Do we have this up where we could put it up for the public to see?
Chair Dreheim, I just ask a technical question, especially if there are follow-up questions for my board members that you send after this hearing.
That's just in general for the committee. I get frustrated with other hearings and other committee meetings that we don't follow up enough with questions. So I feel any member of the committee that has questions, we all should do our best so we understand the issue 100%. So that's kind of one of my goals. So we'll always have questions that we'll move forward to whoever needs to dig into them, so everybody understands and we're all on the same page. So that's what it wasn't really directed at the board members. This is more for the committee.
Well, thank you, Chair Dreheim and members of the committee. It's good to be back. I think probably the other process step, Chairman, you and I and your staff can talk about is, when is it that you want us to submit written answers versus when is it that you'd like me to do a full presentation? I've come today prepared to speak to specific questions that were asked that we noted in Thursday's hearing. You sent over this list of questions last night, and so we will be working on written responses to these questions, but if you'd like me to present on answers to these questions, I could be ready to do that on Thursday, at least for most of them. Some of them go back quite a bit in time.
Okay.
I think there was a specific request that I speak to one of them, but what I thought I would do is come back to the specific rent help MN question that was asked about the numbers on the two different slides. And then we did send to members right before the hearing here, written answers to some of the questions that we had noted from the Thursday hearing. So I don't know if you received those, sir, and if those were able to be distributed to the committee in writing, but then the piece that you have on the screen right now is the email from last night. And so those we'd like to put off till Thursday if that works for you, sir.
Yeah, that does work, Commissioner. I got an email at 1:01. So I don't think the members have gotten a chance to see that yet, but continue on.
Chairman and members of the committee, specifically in the discussion of rent help, and I believe it's in these follow-up questions as well, I was around a number of different types of numbers that we use to characterize where the program was at a couple different points in time. And I want to just lead with apologies. There's a lot of complex moving parts in this program. And I think sometimes in the interest of transparency, I'm trying to kind of show that there's lots of different parts, but I'm not certain that actually helps me explain it sufficiently when I'm in a hearing with you. So I appreciate the opportunity to come back and address it and provide clarification. I think, you know, probably going forward, the two numbers I think that folks probably care about the most are the total amount in payments made and the total of unique households that are ultimately served. And again, as we move through time, that number is going to continue to change because we're making payments every business day. So as of February 4th, in the slides that we had last Tuesday, we had put $374.3 million out the door, serving 48,079 unique households at that moment. I think the essence of the questions were kind of why were the payments made on January 31 and February 4th, you know, why would those be different? Well, it's because we're making payments every business day. If you asked me what it was as of Friday the 11th, then the numbers would be different again. But then also it's the difference between payments, households, and unique households. So we can make multiple payments on behalf of a single household. We can have a household come back in when they're behind again. And so we can make multiple payments on behalf of the same household, but how many households are we uniquely serving? So going forward, I've asked my team to just be really clear about as of what date, what are the dollars and what are the households? And if you want to get into the nuance of that, we'll be able to do that. Yeah, I think, you know, my understanding is at the end of the day, you know, everybody is tracking, do we have enough money? Because the households that are sitting there in a pending status, you know, want to know that they're going to get help. So that payment information is really important. And obviously, of course, how many people did we help? So that's really my answer to having maybe too much data in the slides last Tuesday. And we'll try to really focus in on as of which date, how much money and how many households.
Yeah, the confusing part, I think, Commissioner, was that the earlier date had, I believe it was more money than the later date, which if you're having payments going out every day, they should accumulate and grow in a dollar amount, and they actually contracted over that 4 or 5 day period. So that was, you know, I understand. I'm sure you have a spreadsheet for maybe every program. I don't you know, I don't know how you guys track that, but you know, part of our responsibility is to have oversight, and I think that's probably the reason we offered to help back in December was that we wanted to make sure that it was able to help everybody that was intended to help. And you know, we're just getting mixed signals, from the agency on the whole program.
Chairman, the numbers are moving all the time, and they don't always move in the same direction. We have processes where there are recouped amounts. We have processes where there's just a lot of reconciliation. The Treasury Department you know, has asked for our reports to them to kind of reflect all of this nuance. But when you just kind of take a look at it, you know, there are lots of numbers. What I can tell you is that I've got a lot of people that are working with terabytes full of data, not just spreadsheets, to be able to track these dollars to the penny, and that the numbers are going to move move around a lot as we work towards all of the final reconciliations. And that's just the nature of an enormous program like this. But there's no, it's not for lack of oversight and control. In fact, you know, we've already had our preliminary single audit on this program because some of it operated in the last fiscal year. And so we've got a lot of outside people making sure that we have the right amount of internal controls. But happy to, you know, happy to be back, Chairman, as often as you like, so I can continue to keep you up to speed on these numbers as we continue to make payouts.
Okay. Continue, Commissioner, sorry.
Well, if there's any other questions on Red Help, let's stay there, sir. I was ready, I think we were asked specifically to see if we could answer to the question that we got from you last night on the Broadmoor, and I am able to do that, but I'm happy to take any more questions on Red Help prior if you'd like to do that first.
I do not see any hands up, Commissioner. So you can continue on, please.
So in the question packet that was sent last night, I don't know if everybody has that same question set, if that was distributed to everybody or if that just came over to me, sir.
No, I think it was sent out to the whole committee.
So I'm just, pardon me, sir, I'm just looking to see which question number the Broadmoor question was, so everybody can reference that. It's question number 16. So the last of the questions that came in the questions that were sent over last night. And okay. This is just a technical one, sir, so I just want to make sure that I have my my notes in front of me as we do this. So the question suggests that our grant award was contingent on a matching grant from the city of Marshall. I just want to be clear that the Broadmoor Valley Selection Materials provided that city and municipal entities were considering contributions, but the award was not contingent on those funds. The award was contingent on the city of Marshall completing the scope of work for the project, as well as signing off on the project completion and approving the work as it is completed, which would be a necessary role for the municipality to play in this. It's so that we have a public entity overseeing and approving the work so that we have additional assurances that the agency's award is being used for the improvements to benefit the residents of the park who are dealing with poor conditions today. So so the possibility was acknowledged, but our award was not contingent. There's a set of sub questions here at A. At what point in the RFP process are cities or other entities contacted to verify that they are indeed providing the matching funds? So if an applicant is seeking points for committed leverage, they must be able to submit documentation with the application. In this case, there were no points in terms of how we scored the application for leverage. B, what happens if a city or other entity is falsely represented as providing matching funds in an application? That this just hasn't been an issue with this program before, so we would need to look at it on a case-by-case basis. C, if the city does not provide the matching funds, does Minnesota Housing award a grant to another project? So I just want to confirm that that was not a requirement in this case. This program doesn't have a matching requirement, but it does allow applications to claim additional points for committed leverage. So in this instance, nothing would change. And then the last question, other than Broadmoor Valley, has this occurred before? And I think the premise of what has occurred is different than hopefully my explanation conveys. So we don't have the situation, I think, that the question anticipated.
Thank you, Commissioner. And so if this was a program that did require some matching funds, what can you just briefly go over the procedure that would be used to make sure that the funds did come in or were awarded from the community?
Chairman, we have lots of different funding streams with lots of different processes to do lots of different activities. So I could prepare for you in our written responses or in our presentation for Thursday some four examples on that. But I am guessing that staff would say to me it's not a one-size-fits-all piece because it's different representations in different scenarios, some of which are required and some are nice to have. I think the overall point is that the legislative investments, as we discussed before, although I'm confusing it with the broad overview that I did, I believe, for the House at the beginning of session. All of our investments leverage, all of your investments leverage, they leverage in different ways. And so, I think that leverage is always beneficial because it stretches these state resources further, but they're not required in every instance.
Any other questions, members? Well, I think we'll get done early for once. So apologize for the late start. Thank everyone that took time to join us today. The board members and the commissioner, thank you. Members, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I recently read the report on 4D housing that the Department of Revenue did. And at some point, I would really be interested in housing finance interpretation or analysis of that. County associations and city associations have very different opinions about how 4D has been used and continues to be used, as opposed to the advocates for low-income rental housing that consider it a vital part of the overall maintaining of low-income rental housing that is within the 4D program and has been there for the last 20 years. So it's at some point, not right now, but at some point I'd be interested in yourself or someone from the agency responding to that report. And I think the final report was issued January 15th. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Commissioners, any thoughts on that?
Chairman, Senator Rest, thank you for the question. We're working closely with the Department of Revenue on that issue. And certainly can talk to Commissioner Doty about the best way to talk about that. So we will follow up.
I think it's an excellent idea, Senator Rest, and we can definitely carve some time out for that and get people's input on that. I think would be worthwhile. So thank you for the suggestion. Members, with that, we are adjourned till Thursday. Thank you.